Let's go ahead and get into the Word, which is why we're here. We are in Joshua chapter 6 today. Verse number 15 is where we will pick up. We had a bit of a cliffhanger drop-off yesterday. Joshua has met the commander of the Lord's heavenly army. Now, whether that's God himself or whether it's his high-ranking angelic representative, I don't think we can tell for sure from the context, but he gives the plan that Joshua should take Jericho in a miraculous way. He needs to march the warriors around the perimeter of Jericho, presumably at a safe distance, with the first military groups in front, followed by seven priests that are blowing shofar trumpets, followed by the Ark of God's Covenant, followed by the rest of the warriors in their battle lines. And so they're going to go around once each day for 6 days. It's only going to take them a few hours to march the few miles from Gilgal up to Jericho, around it, and back. And that's what they do. In complete silence, other than the sounds of the trumpets and the sound of their actual marching movements. Nobody's supposed to be talking at all. And I talked about how this must have been very strange for the people in Jericho to see. Now, not a ton of people probably left in Jericho. More than likely, only the combatants are left. Only the men of war are probably left. Everybody else has probably gone away. And I have a sneaking suspicion that each of these 6 days, everybody gets up on the walls and watches this strange parade. Until we now arrive at day number 7. Now, which day of the week is it? I wonder whether or not it might have been the first or the second day of the week, so that they did not have to do these multiple rounds on the Sabbath day. So verse number 15, on the seventh day they rose early at the dawn of day and marched around the city in the same manner 7 times. So they get up, they march to the city in the very early morning light, and they go around it once, quietly, blowing of the trumpets only, just like they've been doing. The Canaanites have already gotten used to the idea that they do that once, and then they go back to their camp. But on this day, they go around a second time. And I have a feeling this brought a lot of the Canaanites up to the top of the walls, wondering what's going on. Verse 15 continues, it was only on that day that they marched around the city 7 times. So it would have taken them a few hours to get all 7 circuits in. So more than likely we've reached the middle of the day by the time they make their 7th circuit and complete it. Verse 16, at the 7th time, when the priests had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, shout, for he who is has given you the city, and the city and all that is in within it shall be devoted to he who is for destruction. Now that's very important that he's given that instruction. This city is a first fruits of the judgment of God against the Canaanite people. And nobody amongst the Israelis is allowed to take any booty out of the city. Booty or plunder is the old-fashioned way that soldiers were paid for their service. When you took the city, you got at least part of the spoils of the city to take away with you. But these guys are being told, Don't touch anything. All of it is to be left in place as devotion to God. Now, he continues, only Rahab the prostitute, or Rahab the woman of loose morals. Because remember, I told you that's what the word can also mean, not necessarily just a sex worker. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. And we know that Rahab is in the process already of converting to the true faith of the one true God. And that's the reason that she acted the way she did on behalf of the Israeli spies and hid them, and why she's been told, get your whole family into your inn, into your house, stay there, and God will spare you, and we will spare you because of that. Verse 18, but you yourselves keep yourselves from the things devoted to destruction, lest when you have devoted them, or you take away any of the devoted things and make the camp of Israel a thing for destruction and bring trouble upon it. Now, that wording for trouble there is in Hebrew, akar. And that's going to come up later in the naming of a place of execution, because somebody is going to blow this off. Somebody is going to ignore this command, don't pick up anything from the city to keep for yourself. Verse number 19, all the silver and gold, every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to he who is. They shall go into the treasury of he who is. So anything of true value, which would be metals, some garments and fabrics, those are going to go to the use of God's tabernacle. Everything else is going to be left in place and burned as part of the burning of the city of Jericho. All right, so they've been given their instructions, and now they're being told, get ready to shout. For the very first time in 7 days, you get to make a really big noise. So the people shouted, and the trumpets were blown. And as soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted a great shout, and the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they captured the city. Then they devoted all of the city to destruction, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys, with the edge of the sword. So the vast majority of the people who died at Jericho, I am almost positive, died in the collapse of the wall. Because where would the majority of these people be except on the top of the wall watching the 7 times around march of the Israelis? Very different on this day than it has been for the last 6 days. So there would have been a ton of spectators up there. And if you're on the top of a 10, 15 foot wall, and it suddenly collapses underneath you, and all of the buildings that are tied into that wall collapse with it, it's not likely very many of those spectators are going to survive. Picture again the design of the city with its walls, and I got this information probably the best from a nice summary paper put out by Answers in Genesis about the fall of the walls of Jericho. The city of Jericho had 2 levels to it. It was on this mound called a tell today. This mound had a high part, a high flat area, which was surrounded by a wall of mud bricks, and that was the upper city. Then there was a slope coming down from that more buildings would have been built on the incline, down to a second mud brick wall that was on top of a stone retaining wall. And this was Jericho's protection. And those mud brick walls collapsed completely, fell down flat, and would have filled in areas in front of that stone wall down below that would then provide a ramp, a natural ramp right up into the city itself, and then from there up into the upper city. So it's exactly as it's described in here. The Israeli soldiers were able to just walk straight into the city, no problems, and they executed any Canaanite that was still there and alive. And we do see here the mention of both men and women. So it more than likely the largest number of them would have been combatants, but maybe a few of their wives stuck around as well. They're gone now. They're dead. And their animals are dead because they're also to be executed. And the whole place will be burnt as a sacrifice to God before the day is over. The only place that did not collapse was the section of the wall that held the inn of Rahab and her family. And it's Josephus, the first century historian, who tells us that Rahab was in an inn, that was her family business, apparently. So the archaeological record shows that there is a section of the north wall of the lower city that did not collapse in 1416 BC. The radiometric dating thing shows the destruction layer of being right around 1400. So that matches exactly what we're talking about here timing-wise. So even the fact that there's a little section of that lower wall that's left intact matches the story that we see here. Verse 22, but the two men who had spied out the land, Joshua said, go into the prostitute's house and bring her out from there, the woman and all who belong to her, as you swore to her. So the young men who were spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who belonged to her. And they brought all her relatives and put them outside the camp of Israel. See, because they are not Israelis. They are in the process of becoming honorary Israelis because they're converting to the true faith. So they are the first proselytes of the gate, which means they have to stay out of the main community area in the place where non-Israelis live. Three generations later, they will be allowed, the male generations later will be allowed to become Israelis proper. But for right now, they have to live outside the proper camp. Rahab, we know, will later marry a man by the name of Salmon, who was the son of Nahshon, who is the head of the Judah tribe during this time period. And we see his name mentioned in both the genealogy of King David, and then later in the book of Matthew as the genealogy of Jesus through King David. So Rahab is the great, many times over, grandmother of Jesus the Christ. Verse 24. They burned the city with fire and everything in it, only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they brought into the treasury of the house of He Who Is. So exactly as we saw described earlier, they got those precious metals out, the things that can be used for the Lord's tabernacle. Those things are recovered. Everything else is piled up with flammable material throughout the entire city, and then they burn it. And guess what? There is an ash layer right here in this time period for Jericho, right around 1400 BC. I put the date as in the spring of 1416 BC. It's also interesting to note that the last year's grain was still in containers. They had plenty of grain in stock. They weren't sieged for a long time, so they didn't get a chance to eat up all of the grain stores they had in stock before the city collapsed and was burned. Verse 25, but Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Now that gives you some hint as to this being written in the timeline of Rahab. She had still not passed away when this inspired book of Joshua was written down completely. So her lifetime was not yet over when the book of Joshua was composed. Verse 26. Joshua laid an oath on them at this time, saying, cursed before he who is be the man who rises up and rebuilds this city, Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn shall he lay its foundation, and at the cost of his youngest son he shall set up its gates. And by the way, that is exactly what happened many hundreds of years later. You can see that in 1 Kings chapter number 16, because a guy by the name of Hiel rebuilt the actual city of Jericho on this site. His firstborn son died at the very beginning of that process, and his last son, his youngest son, died when he was finishing the gates. So Jericho is under this curse not to be rebuilt. Verse 27. So he who is was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land. Not surprising at all, is it? Because this was an amazing victory. Hardly any fighting by the Israelis at all. It was more of a mop-up operation. The majority of the Canaanites that were killed by God himself in the miraculous collapsing of the walls. And there was probably some Canaanite eyewitnesses of this event. People living outside of the city of Jericho, maybe up on the hill that goes up to the central part of Canaan, to the west of Jericho. It would have been a good place for somebody to see everything that happened, including the supernatural collapsing of the walls. So this information gets out into the general public of the Canaanites and adds even more to their terror that this God that's bringing the Israelis into the land is going to judge them and bring to an end their occupation. Then we have to have a sad story. Chapter number 7. But the people of Israel broke faith in regard to the devoted things, meaning not keeping anything from the ruins of Jericho. For Achan, the son of Carmi, son of Zabdi, son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took some of the devoted things. So here we have a guy from the tribe of Judah who sneaks some of the stuff out. And nobody knows about it except the members of his household who help him hide the stuff and are therefore complicit in it. That's very important to know later. But the impact is felt upon the entire nation. It's expressed in this fashion. The anger of he who is burned against the people of Israel. Joshua sent some men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth Aven, east of Bethel, and said to them, go up and spy up out the land. And the men went up and spied out Ai. Now, if you've got a good Bible map, or maybe you're looking at something like Google Earth with me, which I like for this sort of thing, if you look at where the ancient city of Jericho is at. There is this wadi that I told you about that is to the north of Jericho and north of the plains of Jericho. It's a wet weather stream. It's a nice deep gully that's cut into the terrain by the fast-moving torrents of water that happen during the rainy season. If you go from Jericho up to the north and west, you will get into that gully, that wadi, and follow it with its twists and turns as a pathway that takes you up to the interior. And up at the head of that particular wadi is a town that is called Beth El. This is the place where Jacob saw the angels of God ascending and descending to do their assignments. That is going to be the next place that the Israelis want to take control of. And there is a very logistical reason for doing it that way. Because if you follow this pathway, this travel line, up to the central spine of the hilly area that makes up central Canaan, if you take the area around Beth El and the community that's east of it, Ai, then you now have control of an east-west road and a north-south road at the center of Canaan. So it's the crossroads of Canaan. And the bonus is, it is a special site for Israel because it is the site where their ancestor Jacob saw a vision of God. So that's the next place that they're going to take. And since they come to Ai first, that will be the place they want to take control of first. So he tells them to spy it out. Verse 3, they return to Joshua and they said to him, don't have all the people go up. Let us take 2,000 or 3,000 men to go up and attack Ai. Don't make the whole people toil up there, for they are few. So their response is, 2,000 or 3,000 of us should have zero problem taking the city of Ai and then from there taking the city of Bethel, because there's not a bunch of them there. See, Jericho was probably a bigger, more populous town, and it was more than likely less than 10,000 people. So Ai is probably only a couple of thousand at the most. So 2,000 or 3,000 guys, more than sufficient. Except for the fact that they are out of relationship with God because one of their people kept things from Jericho even though they were explicitly told not to. Verse 4, so about 3,000 men went up from the people, and they fled before the men of Ai. And the men of Ai killed about 36 of their men and chased them before the gate as far as Shabarim and struck them at the descent, and the hearts of the people melted and became as water. So they're expecting an easy taking of the city, and instead they get their clocked clean. And they are chased back down that wadi, losing people as they go. They have 36 fatalities. And apparently, that was more than they got in other battles the previous year when they were fighting against Og and against the Amorites on the east side of the Jordan. So 36 doesn't sound like an awful lot of casualties for us, but it was a shocking thing for them. So they know that something is wrong. And when we come back on Monday, we will pick up where Joshua grieves over what has happened and asks the Lord, what is wrong that you are not fighting for us like you said you would?